Welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast from ExchangeWire, bringing you the latest news and views from the world of ad tech, media, and marketing.
Hello and welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast. I'm Amy Newell-Tarin, editor at ExchangeWire, and I'm pleased to be joined today by our CEO, Rachel Smith. How are you, Rachel?
Very well, thank you, Amy. Delighted to be on the podcast.
Good, yeah, delighted to have you as always. And we're also joined by Lindsay Rounshee, our COO.
Lovely to be here.
Welcome. Yeah, good to have you. So today we've got an episode where we're answering your questions. And we've only done one of these so far. So this is our second one. But this is going to be a regular thing now. So you can get in contact if you've got a question that you'd like answered on the podcast. We'll include a link in the description where you can submit your question on a form. So let's get started with the questions. Our first one for today comes from Lauren Wyman, Director of Client Services at Generation Media. She asks, knowing that third-party cookies are fading, mobile IDs are more restricted, and even first-party data is becoming more fragile, how can we as an industry create impact without precise laser-focused targeting? Rachel, I'll come to you first there. What do you think? What advice can you give?
Oh, yes. What advice can I possibly give Lauren, who probably is already extremely experienced and doesn't need my advice? But anyway, I'm very happy to share. So thanks for the question, Lauren. It is a really good question. I feel like we're talking about this with almost everybody that we meet at the moment. So, you know, we're right in the very beginning of April, April Fool's, in fact. Mm. And I feel like we're right in the midst, in the thick of pulling together agendas for ATS Singapore, preliminary agenda for ATS London. Obviously, we're running a lot of content here at ExchangeWire regularly, so we're in constant conversations with people that we meet across the industry. And this has got to be quite the recurring topic, which is how do we measure the impact of advertising at the moment in the current ecosystem, and what does that actually look like? So to the points that Lauren raised in her question, I think the overall answer is that we're absolutely moving away from this kind of hyper-targeted, I cannot laugh, Kira, you fuckwit. You could have just walked out. It's just this comedy jig down the
stop bloody sabotaging
pink panther walk out of the meeting room.
It was a comedy pink panther jig
out of the meeting room. He's looking at a selection of jams on the kitchen shelf.
What the fuck are you doing? He's come out just to sabotage.
I've got loads of fucking Spanish food. I need a chocolate.
Oh my lord. Are they going to stay in there?
I needed chutney.
Exactly. Kieron jigs out of the office to get some chutney, emergency chutney. Jesus Christ.
Oh, my Lord. Oh, that's going to make everything so much harder from now on.
Oh, God. No, I needed chutney.
Okay. Composure. Right. Okay. So I think the overall answer to Lauren's question is that we're definitely moving away from this advertising and marketing environment, which is laser focused on precision targeting. So moving away from a more hyper targeted environment to something that is focusing much more on quality over quantity. The points that Lauren raises in her question, data privacy, disappearance of third-party cookies, identity becoming more fragile, even first-party data, becoming only usable in certain environments. What overall impact is that having on advertising? She's already hinted at it in her question. It is making it much harder for us to target people with precision. That's not necessarily a bad thing, though, I would argue. And if you look at this from a sort of helicopter view, one might say, are we going kind of right back to the start, pre-digital advertising, where advertising wasn't particularly targeted, was much more generalised, but I think a lot of people would argue was possibly almost certainly a less intrusive experience for the average user, and was possibly slightly more creative, and the creatives were maybe a little bit more thoughtful and a little bit more engaging. And so I think we're moving from an environment away from hyper hyper-personalization and precision targeting to something that is much more focusing on other metrics and measures, contextual attention, looking and searching for audiences in those high intent environments, which means that we've got to use different tools and tactics to prove the value of advertising in those environments. I think there's lots of complications and nuances here. You know, the big question is, what does measurement and attribution look like in modern day marketing and advertising? And we've been speaking to loads of people about this over the last couple of months, because there are various technology tools and solutions that are trying to answer that question. And there's also various views from both the buy and the sell side of the industry as to whether those tools and techniques are working well. But my initial response to Lauren is, we are going to have to prove the impact of advertising using different metrics. We can't focus on hyper-personalized targeting and use the same measurement metrics that we were using to prove the value of that. We have to accept that we're in a world where that's not possible anymore. So we need to then start to look at the metrics and tools that we have got available to us to prove the value of advertising in a less targeted environment.
Yeah, absolutely. And you kind of touched on the fact that this isn't necessarily a bad thing. Lindsay, could you expand on that maybe? What do you think?
I completely agree. I think it's not a bad thing. I think that, you know, Rachel's point about us kind of going back to the beginning of sort of pre-digital and looking at, you know, one-to-many broadcast media was never necessarily a bad thing. You know, it's overused, but just because we can doesn't mean we should. Like, adage plays well here. We had access to all this data, and because we had access to all of it, we felt we must use it. And did we need to use it in the way that we did? And it feels like, you know, effectiveness was conflated with the word precision. And we felt like effectiveness and precision were the same thing, but actually they're not the same thing. We just used precision and effectiveness together because precision is measurable and effectiveness is not. And also, you know, we've been using precision as if precision's the goal, and actually precision should be treated as a means to an outcome. And, you know, just look at agencies across the world, how many precision teams are there within agencies versus how many outcomes teams are there? You know, when I was back at Publicis back in the day, we branded our data, our digital team, to the precision team. And, you know, for example, like, that makes us all believe that that's what we're working towards. We're driving precision. We actually know we're driving outcomes. And what does that mean? That doesn't necessarily mean one-to-one is the answer. There's many other ways of doing it. And I think that, you know, to Rachel's point, this helps us be able to look at other ways of measuring effectiveness. There's, you know, there's things like identity graphs and super signal aggregators, a term that Ciaran coined, or Pink Panther Ciaran coined about,
I was about, you know, to say, was about this before time, he took the jig, yeah, from took, the meeting took, room took, down to get to grab his interrupt chutney, our recording
to, yeah, grab his chutney. Yeah. He coined it about a year ago to define kind of, you know, looking at kind of how you're bringing signals together with kind of underpinning it with deterministic data to really kind of help us be able to get a better view of how we can target more effectively without relying on third-party cookies. And so signals play an important role here, as does first-party data. And, you know, Lauren's point that first-party data is becoming a bit, you know, there's a bit more of a risky area, that it's true for many, many reasons. So actually being able to kind of underpin it and enrich it with these signals and with different probabilistic data, which again used to be quite a dirty word, but I think now is becoming, people are becoming more and more comfortable with probabilistic. Doesn't necessarily just mean probably. Probabilistic still means, you know, most likely. It's not deterministic. It's not, but probabilistic is not what it used to be 10 years ago. And so there's lots of different things we can do there. And then the big thing is, of course, creative. This helps us be able to go and look at creative more effectively. How can we actually use creative better across both performance media and branding media? It feels like it's been lost along the way in favour of looking at data, in favour of looking at how we target a person, not how we communicate with that person. And that, I think, becomes probably the key outcome here.
Yeah. I think the other thing is that this is a period of adjustment where the industry has to accept that there isn't a single solution for proving the value of marketing and advertising today because it's a completely different environment to what it looked like even 3 years ago compared with 10 years ago. So it's going to require a range of tactics and a range of tools. And, you know, I think that the industry is still in a period of testing the validity of those tools as we're going along. We know already that even the environment in which ads appear is changing dramatically in a digital context. Let's say 2 years ago, we talked a lot about what we often referred to as alternative channels, you know, whether that might be CTV, digital out of home, audio, retail media. Those channels have, advertising in those channels has become more sophisticated in the last couple of years. We're keenly awaiting what advertising in LLMs is going to look like. And so what that means is that different tools need to be used to prove the value of advertising investment across all of those channels. And it's not just, I firmly believe it's not just this drive towards legislative controls around data use and therefore, you know, the deprecation of third-party cookies that has created this environment. It's a general trend. Consumers have got different expectations. We're moving around the internet in different ways. And so we have to adapt as an industry. So I think getting comfortable with this idea that you mentioned as well, Lindsay, that you know, precision perhaps wasn't always precision, and probabilistic is probably more scientific than it used to be. And getting comfortable with those concepts is going to be part and parcel of the journey. And you've already mentioned some of the tools that are available. There's also things like, you know, focusing a bit more on brand instead of performance, using brand lift studies to understand sentiment, understanding attention, using contextual tools. The sophistication of those tools is only going to increase in the coming years. And I think they're going to be extremely relevant ways for us to prove the value of advertising and the effectiveness of it.
And I also feel like, I don't know if you agree, Rachel, but I do feel like we often are guilty, I'm not saying it's strange, or I'm saying the industry, are guilty of talking about everything within programmatic with an open web lens. Everything is open web related, and actually it's not. Open web represents a very, you know, a dwindling part of kind of what is addressable media today. And there are so many other channels, obviously, that we talk about frequently. We talk about retail media, CTV, audio out of home. We talk about them, but I feel like we still talk about them with an open web programmatic lens.
Yep.
And that's not particularly helpful because it then doesn't help us be able to kind of embrace kind of what omnichannel can do and kind of how we can bring in different signals and really understand how all those different channels work together. And of course, you know, the in-app ecosystem as well, which is absolutely huge. Insanely huge, and that often gets overlooked. And so I think this creates a massive opportunity for us to bring all these channels together, which all work so beautifully differently. But, you know, MMM helps to bring them all together in terms of measurement and effectiveness perspective, and that makes this very exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I just think that what we understand as the open web today is, again, going to look really different in another couple of years' time. So what I'm not suggesting is that there is no relevance for activity in the open web, but I think it's all guided by the way that we move around the internet, and that is already changing rapidly. All of those channels that you referenced, Lindsay, are, as you said, environments where there's plenty of opportunity and there's also a lot of innovation, so it's a really exciting period. And what we might find, there's every reason to suggest that what we might find is, you know, in another 6 to 12 months' time, we're moving around each of those channels differently. We've got different expectations across those channels. It's maybe much more common to be sat in front of a streaming platform and getting ads that you can actually, you know, that have got a call to action that you can connect to on your mobile phone. And you won't, as a consumer, you won't find that alarming or disturbing because you'll perhaps have a greater sense of confidence that your data is being protected, or you'll understand how all of this is unfolding. I just think we're in a period of such rapid change and expansion in terms of advertising capabilities that it's keeping pace with consumer behaviour, and things are going to look very different in another 12 months' time. And personally, I think that's a good thing because I think it opens us out to lots of innovation and opportunity.
Yeah, I feel like we were previously in a bit of a try it phase, and now we're moving from that into more of a fix it phase. But that brings with it so much more innovation as well.
Yeah.
And that makes it very interesting.
Yeah, I agree completely.
Yeah, there's so much innovation that will probably take place in the coming months because there's been so much change. So, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So let's move on to our next question. So this is asked by 8and4 Agency's Chloe Singleton, who, by the way, also now has a quarterly column with Exchange Wire. So she asks, there's a rush of brands wanting to buy tools that showcase LLM visibility information. What's the credibility here, the barriers and the accuracy of data? How far have these tools come? Lindsay, I'll come to you first this time.
Super interesting question.
It's such a good question and got me down a few rabbit holes, I will say, in trying to look into this one. So I want to take a step back and actually clarify what we mean by LLM visibility, because it might not be on everyone's radar yet. If you don't work within that space, you might be like, what the hell are you talking about? But it is, does what it says on the tin. It's basically, is my brand visible in AI overviews, in LLM responses, and kind of what and what that looks like? Kind of, you know, if for example, if you use Google Analytics, and somebody's searching kind of what's the best DSP for a mid-sized brand, it might throw up five different names. And if I am a DSP whose name gets clicked on, I'll be able to see, oh, a click came through from this source, from this LLM source. So I can see that someone clicked through using my own analytics. But if my brand appeared and no one clicked, I would never know my brand appeared. Mm. Like, it's completely lost in the ether. It's like if a tree falls in wood and doesn't make a sound and no one's there to hear it, does it make a sound? It's basically that. Like, nobody would know that that brand was ever listed apart from the person that saw the response and the LLM that produced it in the first place. So these visibility tools exist to try to help you understand. It's basically like a brand listening tool, which we use across social media already. Is this similar for that, but for LLMs? And so there are two different ways in which they work. One is an API wrapper, and one is basically kind of client mimicry. So the AI wrapper uses the API wrapper. The API wrapper uses its API to basically kind of ping an LLM, ask it a query, ask it a prompt, and then record the response. So it's done in a synthesized way. It's not done in a kind of real kind of like legitimate way that a person might use it, but it does. It's scalable. It's cheaper, and it brings you kind of, I guess, kind of sort of more useful responses. Client mimicry will actually go and scrape a browser and kind of act as if you are a person kind of using the tool, which you could argue is more accurate because it's more like somebody's actually using it, and that could be a genuine response that you might get. But it's within the grey areas of legal grey area of the LLM's
scraping
terms of
data
service.
And
exactly. Not that they care about that. If you flip it around the other way, of course. But you know, let's be legal here.
Yeah.
And also, it's not scalable because it's kind of quite specific. So. Yeah. There are two tools that exist, two ways of these exist. And there are some big tools out there. Some of the main ones are LLM Refs, Otterly, Profound, SEMrush Sensor, and even Adobe has its own tool. And what these tools look at, they look at if your brand was included in a citation, sentiment analysis, so kind of in what sentiment the brand was mentioned, obviously in a positive or negative way, what the share of voice was, that versus other brands within the response. And it also provides insights in something called GEO, which is
not geography.
I really cannot say the same words. Generative engine optimization.
Yeah, okay.
And that is a thing I think that is the next big hill to climb is this GEO, whatever you want to call it, whatever people are calling it, who knows. But should you invest in these tools? In my opinion, from a brand monitoring perspective, it wouldn't hurt to, because you've got no other way of knowing. There literally at the moment is no other way of knowing. If you want to use it for insights into how to optimize your own site to ensure that you appear in these listings, because you have a good SEO ranking in Google does not mean that the LLM will pick it up. The two are not remotely related. The LLM is looking for sentiment, is not looking for a Google ranking. So from that perspective, you might find it useful, but there are some caveats that it's still quite new, and the insights aren't necessarily very helpful, and there's no real kind of understanding yet of how the LLMs are truly picking what they're and if you perform any search on LLM right now and look at the citations you get, some of them come from some really weird
random
sites,
sources.
You go, what the hell? I'm just gonna click on that, see what that is, and you go, I've never heard this in my life. This does not seem verified.
So
that's kind of, you know, it's understanding kind of what that will look like. Where is the LLM getting these results from?
So do you think there are some credibility issues here?
Or? I think there are credibility issues, but I think it's because it's just so new. And so I think these tools are still sort of finding their feet. Some of these tools you might have heard of outside of the LLM visibility game, like they've existed in other tools before, like Otterly, for example.
Yes, I feel familiar.
They do summaries of video calls.
Okay.
So they already have like different AI tools. So a lot of them will be kind of probably branching out and going, well, what else can I do in the AI space? This feels like the next obvious thing for me to invest in, thing for me to build. I also think that because it's so new and there's quite a lot of these smaller tools at the moment, they're not going to exist probably in 18 months' time. I reckon there'll be a lot of consolidation, a lot of acquisition, but also, you know, does Google want to build its wall a couple of bricks higher? Why wouldn't Google want to build its own
their
optimization
own tool? That's
engine?
What I was going to say is, do you think LLMs will develop their own tools? Because also, let's imagine that they will be running advertising at some point. They're going to want to prove the value of the advertising environment. So a key thing to do would be able to say to brands and advertisers, well, this is where your brand appeared.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can give you some metrics around that. Mm-hmm. Because at the moment, who would who would contract and pay for those tools? Would it be brands themselves or agencies? What does the sort of path to accessing that information look like?
It would be a mixture. So brands might invest in those tools as part of the way that a brand might invest in a brand monitoring tool more generally. Yeah. Mm. Or you might find that it currently sits within like an SEO team within an agency.
Right.
Or within the brand. Either or. So the SEO team could invest in it. And then it depends again how these tools are set up. So there might be tools that will have a kind of a client level account that will say they are targeted at agencies that have multiple clients, and you can then run all your clients from one platform, which is the way that many platforms work anyway. So the DSPs, search engines, search engine optimization, exactly the same. So that it could be like that, or it could be that they are targeting advertisers specifically to invest in that from a brand monitoring perspective. And so I think that also then raises the question, because this is the new search engine.
Yep.
So within that, you've just made the point yourself. You've got the advertising aspect of it. So where is my brand appearing in a paid ad? And then also the organic side of it.
Yep.
Where and how is my brand appearing in the non-paid aspect, in the organic aspect, in the synthesized response that the LLM is providing, the prompter? And so where will that sit within a brand, within an agency? Mm. Will the paid bit go into the PPC team? And will the GEO bit go into the SEO team? In which case it will, again, kind of sit within their suite and their tools of things that already exist as a kind of way of monitoring, way of optimizing. Could like a Marin or a Kenshu style kind of super aggregator, super optimizer exist that sits above the LLMs and allow you to optimize them all in one place? Maybe not, because it's more complicated than PPC, whether you've got actual actions you can take and things you can do. You can optimize bids, you can optimize keywords. This is more complicated than that. I think it will sit, as you said, sit within the actual LLMs themselves. Mm. Certainly Google would make sense. Microsoft with Copilot would make sense as well, because they already have the tools to make this. ChatGPT, I think OpenAI might build something similar, Anthropic something similar. But I think that it's worth investing in. They've come a long way. They've still got a very, very long way to go. Mm. So invest with caution and don't expect to get really strong insights yet in terms of how you optimize, because I just don't think it's clear where what that will bring you. And you also then won't really know if it's worked because we still haven't really got the listening tools can only do so much. And the other point to note is these tools don't say upfront whether they're API wrappers or whether they are client mimicry. So if you do want to invest, it's something for you to ask them how they actually get this data. Because again, especially if you don't want to go into the grey area of client mimicry.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it strikes me that brands would be, you know, foolish not to explore this, because they need to understand what their visibility looks like in an LLM environment. And if we kind of conflate that with the news that came out, was it last week, that Google were potentially going to start replacing website links with descriptions of what the web an AI version of what that web page landing page could look like.
Yeah.
It feels like, and that's when they're providing AI overview results, and it feels like they're sort of edging into that territory anyway. As a brand, you want to understand what's happening when people are querying anything that relates to your products. So it would seem foolish for them to not invest. I think you're right. You've got to be really cautious, because exactly what results are you getting from these tools at the moment? in addition to querying what methodology the tools are using or what technology the tools are using, I'd want to understand more about the methodology, because there's no sense of standardization across this at the moment.
Not at all.
Because it's still such a new area, not only of technology but also of consumer behaviour. So I'd want to really get to the bottom of that. And it also feels like this is a massive area that standards-based organisations will want to really get engaged in and unpick and understand and be critically involved in the development of. So there's absolutely a role for IABs here to try to be working with LLMs or owners of LLMs to say, well, you know, how can we try to implement some measurement standards in this environment that will help brands and advertisers understand, like you said, any kind of paid results, but also organically how they're showing up in search results. I think the other thing that was really interesting, Lindsay, about what you said is this move from, you know, you were saying that SEO doesn't necessarily feature in LLM visibility studies. But when I was doing a little bit of research on this particular question, one of the things that kept coming back up was brands will still need to do what they currently do and invest money into search engine optimization. And I'm thinking, is this a moment?
But how?
Exactly. Yeah. Is this a moment where we're still holding on, again, a little bit like, you know, measurement and attribution in a more general sense across the industry, where we're still holding on to the same standards and the same tools, hoping that they will be doing us some good, and but there's no way of proving whether they are of any real practical value in this new fresh environment. So I'm a brand, I continue to invest in SEO. That seems very important for lots of SEO reasons, but does that have any impact at all on how I'm showing up in LLM queries and results? And, you know, you've already, in your research, Lindsay, you've already managed to find that generative engine optimization is actually a measurable thing. So it would suggest that SEO has absolutely no bearing on that.
It would, but I suppose, and at the point that what the LLM is looking for is sentiment, and that is what it is using to pick up and pull its results and produce a synthesized answer, still applies in an SEO world. Mm. But because you aren't clear, and honestly, those who work in SEO will say that you're never that clear with SEO either, because also Google do change the rules quite a lot, and they do release new launch new releases, and you have to go, well, everything I was doing last week is now completely irrelevant. I've got to now completely change what I do, and there's lots of black hat and white hat techniques in terms of what, you know, keyword stuffing, and that's a very, very old thing, but there's still lots of kind of dodgy things going on, and SEO is a bit of a dark art. And I think that GEO will also be a bit of a dark art. The paid aspect of it will be less of a dark art because it's trackable, it's measurable, it's optimizable, it's auditable, whereas SEO is far more challenging on that regard, and SEO teams up and down the land know this. Mm. And I, you know, the people I've been speaking to, kind of from when I used to work in search myself, that sit in the SEO teams, you know, those that I'm speaking to are saying that the GEO side of things is at the moment going to fall into their team, and they hope it does because it's interesting and exciting, and they kind of, we've got all this experience and we can bring it into the LLMs and bring it into the AI tools as well. But we will be doing two different jobs, and how do you build a site? How do you optimize a site for both?
Exactly.
To ensure it still ranks, but is also LLM relevant.
Exactly. Because also, if we think about a consumer shift again from traditional search to AI search, and we think about the information that appears in those AI search queries, we're expecting a much higher volume of detailed responses in an AI search environment. We're all used to moving around a traditional search environment where your query wouldn't be long or extensive or complicated because you knew that was going to result in rubbish search results, but it's totally different in AI search. You do the exact opposite. And even if you don't start out doing the exact opposite, you then, as the query evolves, you then start feeding it more information. So you've got higher expectation of the type of information you're going to get in terms of results, which means that if I'm a brand and I'm optimizing my site to be discoverable in an LLM environment, I'm wanting to produce the best quality content and the most detail available about my products so that that does actually get surfaced, that does actually get discovered.
Yeah.
And that's totally different from building a shop front, you know, all glamorous, all glitzy. Whilst that, for many reasons, might still be important, I've been saying for a little while, we're moving to this world where brands become publishers because they've got to have really high quality, original, thought-oriented content to get attention and to start building their brand. And I think that's only going to become even more important if we're talking about GEO as opposed to SEO, because what lands for generative engine optimization naturally has got to be different from SEO because our queries are so incredibly different. And if we're wanting to move to this world where we imagine that we're all going to have agents that move around the internet and book our travel for us and buy our, you know, buy our annual selection of socks is what's on my mind because all my socks have gone.
I'm sorry, what? Buy our annual selection of socks.
Because my socks have got holes.
You say it like it's a completely normal thing. Like all of us do this. We all have an annual selection of socks and we allocate one day in the year. To buy
springtime, it's time to buy new socks because all your winter socks have got holes in them. Even if you weren't here during the winter and weren't wearing them, it turns out.
Why do you even have winter socks? You're never in the bloody country during winter.
But you think it'd be so easy to just go out and buy socks these days? But no, like there's no shops to go buy socks from. So I'm online wanting to buy socks. I'd love it if I could just say to an agent, can you sort this sock business out for me? I need some trainer socks. I need some ankle socks. I want them in these colours. Make it happen. But even in so I know I've distracted everybody by the sock conversation now, but even if that is what we want
to Muji at lunch, they do excellent socks.
Okay, where is it though, Lindsay?
Tottenham Court Road.
Yes, far away from here, isn't it?
You get there in Lizzie Line, you get there in 10 minutes.
True, good point.
10 minutes. Okay. You probably do a half an hour round trip, go in and buy all the socks. They do very good socks, all different shapes and styles.
And I do love Muji.
Yeah.
Sometimes you need to see them in real life.
That's also true. So, yes, rolling with this example, even if we did want an agent to do all of that for us, it would still need such a high volume of information to make that possible, right? Because it's not, you know, SEO query style, I want some socks or trainer socks, ladies trainer socks or something like that. It is, well, what kind of socks do you want and how many of them do you want and what colours and this, that and the other. So I just think that everything we're putting into LLMs is completely different to what we've put into search. So brands absolutely need to understand how they're showing up in any of those results. And LLMs, I think, would be well placed to want to get into that game because don't they need to prove the value of what they're producing? Oh, and then that was the other thing I was going to say. Aren't we then also slightly verging on copyright territory as well? Because if LLMs are scraping all of this good quality information from brand websites, which are becoming more sophisticated, what's the copyright on that? You know, brands have probably had to pay staff to produce that information. It's more sophisticated than the sort of stuff they've had to produce before. Don't know.
Well, Google are already fine. Google are fine because they've already been doing it anyway.
Well, of course, building people's websites.
And it doesn't make a difference because Google will do that anyway. And that then raises the question about from a Google AI overview at the top of the page versus the SERP below, the SEO rankings below.
Yeah.
Do I have to do the same thing? Like, are they looking at the same thing on a site to get the AI overview as they are to get the top 10 ranking, the page one rankings?
Good point.
Yeah. Don't know the answer to that. But
lots of questions arise there.
I think we're really in this kind of mix up of everything moment in the internet.
Absolutely.
Some stuff is very AI driven, LLM enabled. We're already in this kind of AI search environment, but we're still doing lots of stuff the old traditional way as well.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how people end up having to balance kind of still doing any SEO with like GEO potentially. And yeah, because like you said, it's going to be potentially very different ways to optimise.
Definitely.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and great question.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chloe.
Yes.
I enjoyed that one.
Yeah, great question.
Got me talking about socks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I enjoy rabbit holes, so it was good.
And yeah, like you both said, there's huge opportunities there for LLMs to actually capitalise on that. So, yeah. And now our last question for today is from Emily Roberts, Head of Digital at Responsible Marketing Advisory. So she says, how likely is agent-to-agent buying in the future? And would love your thoughts on what the future of our industry will look like. So, Rachel, you already kind of briefly mentioned that just before about,
Socks. Well, thanks for the question, Emily. Very good question. I think that agent-to-agent buying will definitely be happening in the future. I think that's an inevitability because we're already talking about agents buying our own socks. So why wouldn't they buy advertising campaigns for us? So we're definitely going to be operating in that world. And I remember when I did a Trader Talk, Film to Trader Talk with Ali Noor Muhammad from Nodals late last year. It was kind of September time, just before ATS. We were talking about what his platform does, which is basically provide more granular information on the quality of publisher data in order to match it more precisely with advertisers' desired outcomes. And, you know, as he's sketching it out for me on the board, I said to him, you know, are we looking at what the pro forma for agent-to-agent buying could look like? And he said, absolutely. We probably didn't capture that bit on camera because there was quite a bit of off-camera chat, but he said, absolutely, we're going to be operating in a world where there's going to be a buy-side agent speaking to a sell-side agent, and that's where the advertising transaction is going to happen. But what I'd say from the information that I've researched and just from updated conversations I've had with Ali, I just grabbed a coffee with him this morning, and from what we all already know about the mechanics of buying and selling advertising at the moment in a digital environment, we're absolutely not there yet. A lot still needs to happen on both sides of the advertising value chain, both the sell side and the buy side, to enable that. I think we're just at the start of that journey. A real theme for the last story as well, we're just starting to see the intersection of old ways of doing things collide with new ways of doing things. And there needs to be quite a lot, I think, happened to the infrastructure on both the buy and the sell side, but certainly on the on the sort of generating demand side of the industry to enable agent-to-agent buying. And an example that Ali gave me when we caught up this morning was, think of it like driverless cars. It's something that is super cool at the moment. There's very little practical examples of it here in Europe and the UK, but there's some really interesting examples of it over in the US where they're actually taking full driverless car journeys, and it's becoming more sophisticated and it's becoming safer. So at the moment it's still a bit of a novelty, but there's no way that the technology isn't going to develop to a stage where it's highly likely that we'll all trust the notion of automated, automated car journeys and driverless car journeys. It seems in a weird way kind of very futuristic to imagine it now, but there are people undertaking driverless car journeys right now over in the US. So there's no chance that it's not going to eventually end up here. And that's the same for agent to agent buying. It's just that we are not there yet. So the second part of Emily's question, what is the industry going to look like? I think, to be honest, we're in it at the moment. We're in the maelstrom of it at the moment, where you're starting to see both SSPs and DSPs, if we think of that as the infrastructure layers of as representing the infrastructure layers of the ad tech industry, are already starting to add on new capabilities to their platforms that they didn't really have a couple of years ago. So more direct integrations with either side. So SSPs looking at ways to be able to do deals more directly with buyers, advertising buyers, DSPs looking to enable, access to inventory directly for publishers on the sell side. So we're going to, those changes are bringing us closer and closer to an environment where those platforms and then all the other layers of technology that we use in ad tech are sophisticated enough that we can instruct agents to go about making buys and creating campaigns without us around. I think the barrier at the moment is not just sophistication of the tech tools, but it's also that AI and also our kind of, perhaps in some parts of the industry, a bit of reluctance to move towards that, because if agent-to-agent buying exists, what happens to all of the people that currently do that manually? My personal view is there'll be plenty of other jobs for those people to do, and one of those will be overseeing the data that goes into those agentic platforms to make sure that the buying is as good as it can possibly be. And so it'll be all about optimization and overseeing the quality of the inputs, because we all know that AI tools are only as good as what we're feeding them. So that will be super important. And then the second thing is, I don't believe that you know, it's possible for agents at the moment to necessarily operate in an ad tech environment across platforms. Within platforms, possible. Across platforms, not yet possible, is my layperson's understanding. So I still think that there's quite a way for us to go. So, yeah, in summary, in answer to the second part of Emily's question, what's the industry going to look like, you know, over the coming 6 to 12 months, it's going to be a matter of us kind of continuing to accelerate this journey towards infrastructure ad tech becoming much more multifaceted and being able to do things on the other side of the fence, and that moving us more towards an agentic environment, but we're not there yet. So it's going to be a matter of getting to grips with that, I think, over the next 6 to 12 months.
Mm. Yeah, it's still a very nascent area. Lindsay, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with what Rachel said. And I think that one of the things that I've been thinking about that I don't know if this is true or not, but it makes sense to me that based on where programmatic is now, and, you know, we're talking about the open web, but where the open web is now, for example, when it comes to a sort of agent-to-agent buying and selling in terms of media, it feels like if we put the current version of the open web into and hand it over to the agents, we're handing over all the problems that it has as well.
Mm.
And we can't expect the agents to fix the problems. We've got supply problems, we've got transparency problems, we've got data problems. There's a lot of problems.
Measurement problems.
Exactly. Yeah. A lot of problems, a lot of things that are unclear, a lot of inconsistencies across definitions, across industries, across categories, across agencies, SSPs, DSPs. Yep. If we plug all that into the agents, they're going to take what we give them. They're not going to be able to interpret it and make sense of it. They're going to just do what we tell them to do. And based on all those issues, that's going to cause us a lot of problems. So from that perspective, I don't think we're anywhere near yet where we need to be, because we don't want to make things worse. Because it will not just take those issues, it will magnify them a millionfold, because it's going to be taking everything and doing everything and it'll be like a runaway train without having the ability to stop it and kind of stop and go, wait a second. Should we stop and take stock for a second and see what, hang on, that's a mistake. And the other issue, of course, which you mentioned, Rachel, is hallucinating. And hallucinating, I think, is a big fear for people to kind of delve too deep into this, which is why a lot of agentic so far is kind of being used sparingly and kind of like sort of low touch, like used for insights and strategy and that kind of thing, rather than hard numbers. And, you know, one decimal point error or kind of a misinterpretation of how a number is calculated could spell disaster. It could mean your campaign go from spending £100 to £1 million. It could be as simple as that. And without the right guardrails in place, that, you know, it could cause disasters. And so I think that anybody working in that kind of environment, you know, I often think about what does an entry-level job look like in the world of agent-to-agent buying, because you couldn't enter the industry the way I did, for example, as a search executive, because that wouldn't exist, because agents would be doing it instead. The work I did would no longer exist. Mm. So what would an entry-level job look like? And I think it's probably coming in and kind of like looking after the agents and making sure those guardrails are in place.
Exactly.
Because if there's no one watching them, that's when problems are going to happen.
Absolutely. And the whole idea of, you know, the acceleration of AI tools from an efficiency point of view is to avoid errors, to avoid rounding errors, accidentally tapping something into the spreadsheet incorrectly. But the only way of that being more of a foolproof method than manually is to make sure that you are inputting the right commands and the right data and the right controls into your AI tool.
Mm.
And so you need to have a sufficient understanding then of what the desired outcomes are. And there is a job for overseeing all of that and making sure that your agents are doing what you need them to do and what you want them to do. And I think then where the value comes in is that your role will be one of optimizing and looking out for further efficiencies, interpreting the data that's returned as a result of the activity that the agent then runs away and does, but also making sure that it's all happening in the right direction. And I still think that that will be really critically important. And we absolutely, you know, to your point, Lindsay, earlier on there, we haven't got to the point of sort of separating our desired outcomes with the, you know, challenges that we haven't solved yet. So we haven't separated those two things out yet. I think we're still very much in the process of trying to solve challenges, trying to work out how we can perform better advertising. So we can't just give the entire transaction wholesale over to agents, a little bit like my sock example before, because that sort of level of precision doesn't currently exist, doesn't yet exist.
No.
So we need to still continue to work to solve some of those problems, and then it can be accelerated up to, you know, up to an agent-to-agent buying level. If we go back to the autonomous driving vehicles example, it would be like having the capability, the technical capability to design an autonomous driving vehicle, but not necessarily really understanding anything much about the safety standards and just kind of giving it a go and hoping for the best. No one's going to do that, right? No. You know, there's all sorts of checks and balances that need to be satisfied first before you can actually outsource the entire transaction to agents.
Yeah.
So I think we're still quite away from that.
And the frameworks coming in will help. So you've got ADCP, you've got UCP, you've got the Agentic RTB framework. Because, for example, without frameworks, without standards in place, and standards are the key thing here, you know, my definition of viewability versus my DSP's definition of viewability and my measurer definition of viewability could all be completely different. And if we're all plugging something into an agent and the agent isn't quite clear on what our definitions of viewability are and how we're measuring them and what the thresholds are, it will take either one of them or its own perceived semantic view of it based on what it can see across the internet, and it will make something up. And so that there are real concerns around definitions, consistency across those definitions. I can't think of the word, but the way that you canonicalization.
Cannibalization?
Canonicalization. Where you've got like sort of consistent naming conventions across different things.
Yes.
That's not the word, but whatever the word is.
I don't know, but I like it as a word.
Yeah, well, canonicalization. So we could try and use that somewhere later.
Definitely.
But all those things need to be considered as well. And I think, you know, this isn't quite the same thing, but like, you know, for example, I had a very specific inheritance tax question that I needed to kind of understand. And I asked Perplexity, Claude, Gemini, and ChatGPT, gave it all the details, exact same prompt for each one. Claude then came back with a bunch of follow-up questions. The other three did not, but every single LLM came back with a completely different calculation.
Great.
And a completely different, like, completely different end results.
Yeah.
And
reassuring.
Yeah. Well, exactly. That's the point. Like, it's not helpful. Like, no. You know, you can't really trust them with numbers yet.
Yeah.
Because they will do what they think is the right thing. Yeah. And how do we know that that's the right thing based on what has been trained to do? Like, there's still a lot of grey areas. And that's why I think it's examples like that, which is why I think that brands are a bit like, I'm going to just
hold off a little
bit. Try it and do something simple first. I'm not going to feed all my data and all my numbers into it.
Well, and I think that's a really good point, right? So there's two things from that. The first, Lindsay, is that if we think about where the balance of power sits in the world of advertising and marketing, it's still firmly with brands, right? They generate the budgets that they devote towards advertising spend and campaigns. So at the end of the day, what they want is good outcomes. If they're getting good outcomes, then they're happy. But if we were to hand everything over to agent buying at the moment, I would imagine that the outcomes would be pretty variable, and that's when brands are going to start saying, hang on a minute, this isn't working for me. So that's kind of like the basic common denominator. And obviously brands have got a lot of say and control and interest in that, as does the rest of the ad tech value chain. So I think that's got to be the thing that drives us. The second point that occurred to me as you were talking there, Lindsay, is that I think we've got natural accelerants to moving towards an agent-to-agent environment in the world of advertising and marketing at the moment. Not just that everything in our lives is becoming very AI generated or AI influenced, but it's also the things that we talked about at the top of the podcast in the first question, which is third-party cookies disappearing, signals becoming, you know, even more fragmented, first-party data having lots of restrictions over it. All of those things are pushing us towards trying to find a better technical solution to get this right. And so I think that's given us the ingredients for the possibility to achieve agent-to-agent advertising, but we're still far away from it being perfect.
But you raise a good point as well, because actually if everything's done agent-to-agent, it means that it removes the need for efficiency and effectiveness gets wiped out, because the agents are kind of all sort of doing, well, their own thing, but the same thing. You could argue that it makes everyone's got the same base level. So then what is the lever you can pull? And that lever, come back to the first question as well, is then creative.
Yeah.
So the lever is then the creative and the messaging and the talking to the person. But then in your soft example, you aren't talking to a person, you're talking to an agent.
I know.
So how
then the quality.
Do you advertise to an agent? Well, what's an agent looking for when you're advertising? So it just just throws up so many
questions, right? But also the quality of the data, right?
Absolutely.
So, you know, and of any of the inputs, whether it's the commands or anything else that you're inputting into it. Like at the end of the day, if I illustrate, as I did earlier on, that the balance of power still firmly sits with buyers and brands in the advertising ecosystem, there's also an incredible power in first-party data. Brands have got some of it, but not all of it. Publishers and inventory owners have got a stack of it and are developing more and more and more of it. So there is still huge amount of value in the quality of data that gets ingested into an advertising campaign. And we need to find ways to train any kinds of agentic advertising on that quality rather than quantity. And then that, you know, brings up lots of issues around performance and scale versus brand and intent. And yeah, we could go on forever on this. I think it's an inevitability
and
it's far away.
And contracts. Remuneration.
Oh, yeah.
Changes completely as well if everything's agent to agent bought. Like, what does agent contract look like, for example, going forward? And, you know, that throws in, there's a lot of conversations around transparency at the moment and principal media buying. You know, the agentic side of things will add a ton more questions into what that could look like in 5 years' time as well.
Yeah. And you remind me, having a chat with a good friend in Singapore who works for an independent agency earlier on this year, and she was saying the sort of the pitch to client isn't going to be, we've got these fantastic AI tools that can do really interesting things. It's going to be, these are all the tools that we're using. A number of them might be AI tools. And this is the output that they're providing us with. And so these are the things that we think you could do as a result of that. And I think that will still be part of an agent to agent layer. You know, agents will be acting on instructions provided to them. And so agencies' jobs will be to come up with more insight, more potentials for optimization. And those will come from the outputs of advertising campaigns. But you will still need experts to be able to say, okay, this is what I think you could do. Here's some options that you've got at your, you know, that are potentially open to you. I don't think it's going to be a done deal, because otherwise, exactly as you said, Lindsay, will be disappearing into this sort of environment where all advertising campaigns look the same and brands will not get, they won't get results from that.
No, and you always raise a really good point as well, actually, because you look sort of maybe not this year, next year, or maybe even 5 years down the line, but 10 years down the line, if everything's done agentically, if everything's done, AI is no longer a USP. AI is no longer a differentiator because everyone's using it in the same way. So what else, like if I'm an agency pitching to a brand, AI doesn't even need to come up in conversation because it is what it is. It is how we do everything. So what else can we deliver? And that's exactly what you say. Like, it has to be the insights. It has to be the strategy. It has to be the research. It has to be the human.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The role of agencies will continue to evolve a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we've proven that humans are still really, really important.
That's
in this
exactly
world.
Right.
Anyone thinking that humans won't be relevant? Well, hang on a second.
I mean,
humans will be the key differentiator.
Absolutely. And I'll be on my way down to Muji to select my own socks.
There we go.
Absolutely. Well, thank you both. Thank you, Lindsay.
Thank you. This has been great. I've enjoyed this.
Yeah. Thank you, Rachel.
My pleasure.
Great. Yeah. And if you have any questions to ask, then please do submit them in the form that will be in the description.
You've been listening to the Mad Tech Podcast, brought to you by ExchangeWire.